Hi, this is Jarrett, and I'm from Maryland. Well, I'm from North Carolina. I live in Maryland now. I've okay. had a few ciders. I've been drinking cider for, I'm 27 now. I'm having to do math on the fly. I'm about 5 years now.
5 years,
yeah.
Okay.
That's great. I'm quickly finding that between English styles and sort of newer IPA styles of ciders, those are becoming my favorites. I really like how they have like a really good fruit forward presentation with very little sweetness, where it doesn't like overpower the added taste to it. I think my favorite food to eat while drinking cider, I like food off the grill, so I like burgers and hot dogs and stuff like that. The more acidic fruit taste really helps to cut through the rich savory flavors. And let's see. I would really like to know more about how you can change some of the base flavors in ciders by changing your fermentation process. So how a pelted cider is made different than like a traditional English cider. Yeah.
You are listening to Cider Chat, and this episode is titled Baltimore Speaks Cider. It is episode number 115. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we have a whole bevy of insight into Baltimore Speaks Cider. A little bit from the cider fans, as you just heard on this opening piece, and we'll also be talking to cider makers from the United States Association of Cider Makers annual conference called CiderCon. I'm going to be giving you a lot of updates, so stay tuned for that. We'll be back in just a moment. Last week, I was in Maryland. I took a road trip from my spot in Ciderville in Massachusetts, and, well, I think I put on nearly 1,000 miles on my car. So that gives you a little bit of the distance that I was traveling. And I thought this week I would share with you a little bit of an insight on my life and what I do as a podcaster to get these stories to you, and to also give you a sense of what happens at CiderCon. If you are thinking about doing this as a commercial cider maker or as one of the many cider enthusiasts I met while at CiderCon. So let's begin on day one. I left on Sunday and headed down to Pennsylvania, figuring that would give me a little bit of a resting point. After spending the night, I was up early on Monday morning and headed to Current Cider. That's based in Perkasie, Pennsylvania, and they make their cider there at a brewery called Free Will Brewing, who's a contract brewery and lets the Current Cider maker, Joe Getz, make some cider. Joe and I spent most of that day sitting by the bar talking, and then we headed down into the basement and looked at the barrels. Oh my goodness, down there. That whole area of Free Will Brewing in Perkasie, the bottom level of it in the basement is really like the sour room, if you will. There are beers being aged in barrels, giant barrels, and of course, Current has their scene going too. Joe and I were able to sip on some of the cider being aged in a barrel, and I want to tell you, it was some of the most smoothest cider that's of a sour style I have tasted. So you should stay tuned for that, because as they are opening their Fishtown location that's based in Philadelphia, I think they're going to be having some of that cider there. And it's kind of like a cidra, but smooth. this as a baby's behind. I couldn't believe it. A lot of viscosity in the actual cider itself. Lovely time. And always a big old tip of the hat to Current Cider because they are patrons of Cider Chat in the Cider Going Up campaign. After enjoying some charming chit-chat with Joe, it was time to head out and go down to Maryland. Before I left, he said, "Reed, you want some cider?" I said, "Sure." I thought he was going to give me a four-pack, but the guy reached over and grabbed two cases of cider. One case of the Bees, which is just a delightful, easy-drinking cider. And believe me, I've been drinking it. I'm super stoked to bring that back home and be able to pass that out to folks around here and turn them on to Current. And the other one is called Earth, and that's a hop cider. So, with two cases of cider in the back seat, I rambled down to Maryland. Only 2 days into the trip, and I was feeling pretty good. I drive a 2006 car, and right before I left, I had to get the pipes on the transmission replaced because it was just spitting out transmission fluid, and I didn't want that. So, I was really happy I got that fixed, and I thought, okay, easy landing over the border in Frederick, Maryland. Well, little did I expect that on my way out to get a little takeout meal that night, the red flashing lights would come up behind me. Yes, I was pulled over by one of Frederick, Maryland's finest, a police officer who I like to call Officer Kine. He saw the sign in the back of my seat and asked me, "What is CiderCon?" Which led me to a little conversation about cider being made in both the U.S. and abroad, and all these folks coming to Baltimore. And wouldn't you know it, that just kind of sweetened his heart, and he realized that I was not that person he was in pursuit of, who might have been doing a little bit of a backdoor deal at the hotel. And let me go with a recommendation of restaurants next time I am in town. Right about now, you keen listeners might be noticing that we just went from mono to stereo because I am still figuring out the equipment that was given to me by Joby, a fine cider maker and enthusiast, and someone who also was able to attend CiderCon. But I'm going off on a tangent. Let's get back to this story. I woke on Tuesday morning, about 2 days before the actual official kickoff of CiderCon, to a light dusting of snow on the ground, which I guess folks down there consider a snowstorm. But for someone like me, up in my spot of Ciderville, well, we just consider that a light dusting. I was headed to Distillery Lane Ciderworks, about 20 minutes out of Fredericks, Maryland. And there I was to speak with the owner, Rob Miller, and cider maker, Tim Rose. I also knew that one of the tours that was doing the pre-conference outing at CiderCon was going to be headed there this morning, and I was hoping to see some of the cider makers. I was there to record an episode with owner Rob Miller and cider maker Tim Rose of Distillery Lane. But wouldn't you know it, standing in the mist with an open bottle of cider, in shorts no less, on one of the most blustery days in January, was none other than Chuck Shelton of Albemarle Cider Works in Virginia. I really recommend listening to his chat number 56. After enjoying a lunch with all the folks on the cider tour, it was time to head into Baltimore to CiderCon, my final destination on that trip. But I couldn't leave before Chuck made sure I had some cider to go, and I was able to get a taste of the collaboration made with Albemarle, Distillery Lane Cider Works, and Big Hill Cider in Pennsylvania. It's about an hour and a half ride into Baltimore, and it's really, really pretty all the way. That is, of course, until you get into kind of the city sights, but that's always interesting, especially when it's a new city. I landed into Baltimore, was able to see Ellen and Sue, who are key players, getting CiderCon set up, got my little name tag, and checked in. That night, I met with Philip Clem, who will be on this podcast. He has Gitchigumi Ciderworks up on the very top, like, I don't know what they have up there besides snowmobiles, but they have this amazing cidery. We had the most delicious dinner that night, finding a restaurant called Ebenezer's Ethiopian Restaurant. We were able to bring in our ciders and had a fantastic conversation. Do look forward to that coming up on Cider Chat. The next morning, it was an early rise because I had a recording set up with Trevor Baker of Noble Cider in North Carolina. They are based right outside of Asheville and are building a tasting room in downtown Asheville. Then right after that, it was a meeting with Marcus Robert of Titan Ciderworks in Yakima, Washington. Both those recordings will be coming up on an upcoming episode of Cider Chat. One of the wonders of being at a large cider conference is you never know who you will meet while there or where you will meet that person. So it just so happened while I was out grabbing a bite to eat, along came Maddie Beeson of Black Twig Cider House in Durham, North Carolina. It was always great seeing him. He gave a wonderful podcast on episode number 70. Do listen to that. Black Twig Cider House is a cider bar, and he had lots of info if you are thinking about doing that or visiting Black Twig in Durham. After gobbling down that burger, I decided to beeline it back to the hotel and conference center to see if I could get a little sneak peek on the U.S. Association of Cider Makers board meeting with the media. I was about an hour late, but nobody gave me any kind of look one way or the other. In fact, I don't think all the board necessarily knows what Cider Chat is, which always kind of leaves me scratching my head. Don't they listen to podcasts? Shoot, all I do is listen to podcasts on how to make my podcast better. So wouldn't it go to figure that if you are on the board of the United States Association of Cider Makers, that you'd be listening to the one cider podcast that is actually publishing every week? Well, that's just the way it rolls sometimes. You just gotta kind of keep on promoting it, just like cider makers promote their cider. And I get it, you get tired. But come on, folks, already. Get on out there. And just to be fair, I won't say that all of them didn't know me, but one in particular did not. So we'll stay tuned for that in just a little bit into this story. Right after that media meeting with the board members, well, then we were whisked out into the lounge where they were going to have the VIP meetup with media. And that meant all the folks who were going to be pouring during the cider share. That means folks are in like little tables. And they're from all over the world pouring their ciders. Well, we got to have a little bit of time chit-chatting with them. So we're going to go to that next and hear from some of the cider makers that I took a little bit of a snippet of their voices. And let me tell you, if you're going to CiderCon, this is something you want to make sure you get to, because there is nothing like being able to walk around with other like-minded folks who are commercial makers and in the trade to really kind of chit-chat business and also, of course, drink cider. So let's next go to an Ontario cider maker, Heartland Cider in Canada.
My name is Brent Clausen. Myself and Val and Kat are down from Heartwood Farm and Cidery, which is just outside of Guelph, Ontario. And we are pouring a few different ciders. Our philosophy is to kind of use what we've got. So we grow apples, we make maple syrup, we make honey, we grow cayenne peppers, we grow black currants. And so those are basically the ingredients that we use in our ciders.
When did you start going commercial?
Last June.
Last June, congratulations.
Hasn't even been a year. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Well, let's try some of your cider.
Let's try
here.
Some. I hope it's cool enough yet. We should have chilled.
It's okay. I don't need
now.
A super chilled.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm fine. I like
there is ice.
A low temperature. It opens it up.
Yeah, yeah. So what we've got wassail, which is a cider that's made steeped on a variety of mulling spices, so cinnamon and cloves. And
you want to
give that a try?
It's in the middle of the winter here, so that's exactly what we should start with.
Exactly.
Wassail,
all over the town.
That's perfect.
There you go.
Oh yes, I can smell those spices.
Yeah.
Kicking out. What's your base cider here? What are you using?
The base cider, like what apples are in it?
Yeah.
Well, we've got it's a blend. There's a bunch of golden russet. There's Jonna Gold, Cortland, Northern Spy, Ida Red. And again, we're kind of using apples that grow well in our area, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, thank you. And you have the wassail. You have a couple different ones.
So dry maple. This is the closest thing to our base cider. So this we back sweeten a little bit with maple syrup. It's an off dry profile. I should squeeze this one in here too. Eve Goes Badass is basically our base cider steeped on.
Eve Goes Badass. Now hang on, folks. Look at this. I want to explain the label to you. It says Eve Goes Badass. I'm going to keep on saying that a couple times because it's so naughty sounding. On the background, the label, it has like a honeycomb. There's a little bee on it, and then a little, like a jalapeno pepper?
It's a cayenne pepper.
Cayenne pepper. Yeah, okay, yeah. I don't know my peppers so well.
That's right.
I should.
It's not necessarily botanically accurate, but you get the gist.
So it's a little bit of honey.
It's got some zip,
and obviously.
Yeah. It's got a fair bit of bite, and the honey is there just to sort of balance the spice. Yeah. So it's sweet with heat.
Ours is more about the floral.
Perfect, and I have a feeling that's exactly who you are too, up in Ontario.
Well, you know, it's funny. We made Eve for, we made a specific batch of this for a fundraiser, and we knew there was going to be a lot of college kids. And so we thought that would be an interesting workshop for doing something that's a little bit outside.
Yeah.
And they loved it, and so subsequently we've kind of kept on making it.
Great.
So do you want to give that a try? All right.
Absolutely.
Eve Goes Badass.
Ooh, wow.
And she does.
Ooh, it's kind of, that has helped my nose just clear right up.
Yeah, that's right. You've got a cold.
I know. Well, I don't. Thank goodness. I have avoided that, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. I could get that. Cayenne coming off of there. I'm just going to sniff it and clarify myself here because it's actually a really nice sensation. I like it, actually. It's opening up my nostril in a way that I kind of need.
It's not our purest cider, right? I mean, the other flavors in there are just so bold.
Deceiving there, Brent. It's like, I thought it was going to be a little bit more hot, but it's not. It's really nicely blended.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Nice. That's a fun one to make.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's rocking. Really good.
Yeah. We hope people find their way back here and experience what we've got to offer.
Thank you very much.
So who are you with?
I just had to have the brontosaurus roar at that moment because that last little statement from Brent is kind of classic. Who are you with? What is Cider Chat about? Folks still do not know that. That's kind of like going up to a cider maker and saying, what's cider? And is that like soda pop? So I'm not going to blame that board member who didn't really know what Cider Chat is, but it just shows you that discoverability, it's not much different than cider. And here's a great way for you listening right now to help out is to ask your friends, do they know about Cider Chat? And if they don't, show them how to subscribe on their phone. And if you are a cider maker out there commercially with a tasting room, then please do let your patrons know that there's a podcast all about cider, specific to cider, and educating people about cider. That would help a lot. In fact, I'm going to be putting up a little PDF online at ciderchat.com that you could download and print out and post on your like little bulletin board that says, listen to Cider Chat, and it shows folks where they could get it. And I, in turn, will continue to talk about cider on this here podcast and let all the listeners out in Ciderville know all the options and possibilities. So when they come knocking on maybe your tasting room door, they'll be walking in with a little bit more information in their back pocket. In fact, I think this is a good time to switch gears and hear from some cider fans that I recorded while attending Pour the Core, a cider festival in Baltimore.
Hi, this is Charnel, and I'm from North Carolina. I've been drinking cider for about 4 years, and that's kind of when I started drinking. I didn't like beer, so cider is my beer. My favorite style of cider, basic apple, like apple cider. I started off with reds. It looks like beer, and so I can drink with everybody else. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider, probably hot wings.
Hot wings.
Yeah,
I love that idea. North Carolina hot wings, I'm there.
Yep. What I want to know about cider, I guess I'm still trying to find different ones, because I'm like, you know, apple cider is kind of, I'm not going to say it's boring, but it's like a little thing. I want to try other ciders, and I have been able to try some here, so it's been good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so do I go now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm Rochelle. I'm from Maryland, Southern Maryland. I'm like 2 hours away from Baltimore. I've been drinking cider, I don't even know how long. I studied abroad in England, and that's when I like really fell in love with cider, when I was like 20, and I've just been drinking it ever since. Like, I love it. Like, I don't drink anything else besides cider. My favorite style of cider is dry. Like, I love dry ciders. But a little sweet every now and then is not bad. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is probably pretty much any, like, cider goes with anything, so everything. What I want to know about cider is, why is it not more available where I live? Like, I live in Southern Maryland, and it's not like it hasn't taken over yet. So we're still
that?
Like, I know, we're like still like beer country, blah, blah, blah. But
can you,
I'm a
request
cider
that?
Fan.
Are you able to request that at your stores? And are
I
they
do request
that?
It, and they're like, so it is becoming more popular, but still, like, there's only a couple places that have it on draft, but... Yeah, so I, like, go out of my way to find good cider.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to pass that info around. Thank
you. All right,
you.
Awesome.
Hi, this is Amon, and I'm from Maryland. I've been drinking cider for, gosh, 22 years. My favorite style of cider is sweets. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is, pork chops. I think
they go well.
Yeah,
do.
Exactly.
They really do. Yeah.
And what I want to know about cider is how long the fermentation process takes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So where are you all from?
Frederick, Maryland.
Frederick, Maryland. Okay. Yeah. When I pulled it over the border from Pennsylvania, I got pulled over by the cop in Frederick, Maryland. But it was a case of mistaken identity. And so we then started talking about cider, and he said, have a nice day. So he said, first he was going to give me a ticket, but then he saw my sign inside saying that I was coming to Baltimore and going to CiderCon, which is happening. So he just let me go. So are you all like, I know, so I kind of like that area, because the cops know me now. So are you all cider drinkers, like, in general?
Yeah, we can handle the hard stuff.
Are you able to find cider in your town or your city?
Yes.
And what's the typical brands that you...
Woodchuck.
Woodchuck.
Angry,
from
no, Angry Orchard. And Woodchuck.
Woodchuck.
Crispin.
Crispin. Okay, so those are all our cideries. Now, here at Pour the Core, is there... something like that you've been trying that you're like, yeah, you know, it tastes really
good.
Summersby
was good.
You liking that?
Yeah.
So do you like the sweet ones? Have you tried any hop ciders?
There was one that had whiskey in it over here.
That was pretty delicious.
It's like a barrel aged kind of cider?
Yeah, it was good.
Like that? Yep. Okay. We got a couple little placards. Okay, cool. And are you hoping that more opportunities, you know, different kinds of varieties might come your way in your town?
Absolutely.
It's kind of necessary, right?
There's one that's from our town
that's right over there, from Jefferson, Maryland.
Is that Castle Hill?
Distillery Works.
Crown Valley was.
Yeah. Oh, Distillery Lane Cider Works. Yeah.
So that's our area.
Yeah, yeah. I just recorded a podcast. Are you going to come on the show pretty soon? Well, that's great. Do you know how cider's made?
Apples.
Apple starts, right? Do you get fresh pressed apple juice where you live? Can you go to a cider mill and get fresh pressed apple juice?
Yeah, McCutcheon. Yeah,
right. So if you let that ferment a little bit inside your refrigerator, you're starting to make cider.
Yeah, right on.
You know, so it's as easy as that. And then it gets fine tuned. Enjoy the whole experience. I hope that more cider opportunity comes your way.
Hi, this is Ian, and I'm from Maryland. I've been drinking cider for 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah. My favorite style of cider would be... I like that really funky cider from the northern region of Spain.
Basque?
Yeah, Basque, yeah. So super dry cider, I really like that.
How did you discover that cider?
I think I had it. I was in San Francisco. There's a cider bar there.
Upsider.
Upsider, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's where I found it. Yeah, awesome. And then I've been to Spain also, but since then.
Well, that helps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll do an executive.
And what I want to know about cider? I don't know. I know a fair amount.
So you're pretty good. You just want to keep on finding the different styles and
yeah,
makers.
Yeah, exactly. Find the perfect cider.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Hello, this is Casey, and I'm from Maryland. I've been drinking cider for 6 years. My favorite style of cider is dry. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is...
Do you normally gravitate towards something when you're having cider, or you just drink
no,
it
alone? No, but it's perfect at a summer barbecue, grilling out. That's perfect. Fun. And what I would like to know about cider is what really kickstarted the cider movement. Now it's so popular and so big. So I don't know what the turning point was.
Awesome.
I want to know. Hi, this is Megan, and I'm from Indiana. I've been drinking cider for probably a year. My favorite style of cider is a little more sugary. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is, probably pizza or something. I don't know.
Okay.
And what I want to know about cider is how they make it. I'm super interested in the whole process.
This is Eric, and I'm from Maryland. I've been drinking cider since today, you know, never actually drinking cider.
Hi, this is Dylan, and I'm from New Jersey. I've been drinking cider for about 4 years now. My favorite style of cider is probably something that's pretty tart, fruity. Actually, my favorite would be Ace Pineapple Cider. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider, that's a tough one. I'd probably go with chicken. I know that sounds weird, but yeah. And what I want to know about cider is, I guess, more how they can get it to taste. Like, for example, something like Ace Pineapple, how they get it to taste so perfectly like pineapple. In an alcoholic drink like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great query. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you.
Hi, this is Missy, and I am from Maryland. I've been drinking cider for, I don't know, 5 years maybe. My favorite style of cider is, I like blackberry cider that's not too sweet. If it's super sweet, then I don't like it at all, but so there's a fine balance. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is, I just like to drink cider. I don't want to eat any food with it. And what I want to know about cider is where to get the best cider.
Hi, this is Brian Myers, and I'm from Kansas. I've been drinking cider for 20 plus years. My favorite style of cider, I've recently found out, is IPA cider. I'm really digging that. The addition of the hops makes a significant difference and tempers the sweetness of the most apples. My favorite food to eat while drinking cider is... honestly, I like drinking ciders by themselves, so sans food. And what I want to know about cider is cocktails to make with them.
A big tip of the glass to Jared, Brent, the group of friends from Fredericks, Maryland, Casey, Ian, Megan, Eric, Dylan, Missy, and Brian. And of course, Pour the Core, which is put on by Starfish Productions, for hosting that Ciderfest in the Railroad Museum in Baltimore. Definitely a place to check out. I was walking around on these old locomotives, some that, or at least one, that Abraham Lincoln stood on. That is wicked cool. Now let's head back to the Cider Share that was taking place on Wednesday afternoon at CiderCon and find out a little bit more from some of the commercial makers who are pouring their wares.
Hi, I'm Chris with Todd Creek Cider out of Victoria, British Columbia.
Great. And how, when did your cidery open?
Opened 4 years ago and been working for about 6 years now on it.
So, great.
Yeah.
So what, you have some ciders in cans?
Yeah, I brought some different stuff for us today because everyone makes cider, so I wanted to bring something a little different that isn't very prevalent. So the first one I have is my Island Light, which is actually a blend of my kombucha with wild fermented cider for a 3% alcohol, so you can drink it like all day long sort of thing. Yeah. It's nice and tasty. The other one I have is my Spanish style cider, which is the with the malolactic fermentation, acetic acid, bacteria doing its thing for that Spanish style sour cider, as we like to say in North America.
Perfect.
So just a couple different things, so I don't get lost in the masses of everyone just bringing their cider.
Those aren't two different things. Yeah. So may I have a little taste of the Island Light?
Sure, the Island Light. So this is a 3%, and as I mentioned, we make our own kombucha. And it's green and black tea with some apple juice in it. Then we let the kombucha thing do its thing. And we blend it pretty much 50-50 with our wild fermented cider.
The closest cider is
that. And the key is really to just have
light
a nice...
Light and refreshing, tea. Really easy drinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And that's what we're looking for.
I love your labeling. Really nice.
Thanks. As far as I know, I'm the first person to be doing... kombucha and cider.
As far as I've heard in the world, that's good. How brilliant, because a lot of cider makers came into cider from kombucha. So
that's
great.
True. So, but it seemed like a really natural fit. Again, like, I'm trying to do like a rather for the cider side of things. I kind of see this happening because, you know, grapefruit juice and apple juice. And there is a cider maker in BC, a big commercial dude that's making a Radler of ciders with like cider with grapefruit juice. So, whatever.
Well, it depends on what you like. On what you like. Because I have to admit, grapefruit's one of my favorite fruits.
Mine too. I love grapefruit juice.
You're just thinking,
but putting it in with cider, it just didn't appeal to me. Anyway, and the other nice thing is we're still dealing with a craft beverage. Like I'm making the kombucha, so I'm keeping it craft as I'm blending it in with the cider itself that we craft, right? As opposed to just buying a bunch of grapefruit juice and chucking it in there or concentrating it or whatever. So that's kind of my thinking behind the kombucha. Keep the craft in the craft cider with both angles. So second one that we have, this one will be a little tricky because it's my Spanish-style cider. So this one here, we're letting you
see. Does it need a hot pour?
It does. So I'll just
cheat a little. Look, you're doing that. Look at that. Oh, I'm impressed.
Oh, it's upside down.
Wow, man. I should have kept my other glass there.
There we go.
Nice. Wow, okay. And I should drink it quickly.
You should. So it's dry, it's still.
Ah, dang, that's a good cidra. Yeah.
But the one mistake I made with this one is when I made the first, this batch, it's a small batch, 150 liter for this one, because it's so unique. I didn't pasteurize it because I wanted it to be as raw wine-like as possible. But it's continuing to change its flavor profile in the bottle. So that's one thing. If I would have pasteurized it, you know, even for like a few minutes, I would have like locked in that flavor. So, but it's nice because the flavor profile does change. For better or worse, I'm not sure, but I don't get that consistency.
Yeah.
So it's a debate, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah. But it's a pain in the butt to make. Because you're letting your cider do that acetic acid bacteria thing, and you got to check it all the time.
And it could go too far, so you kept
you
it like within the zone.
Yeah.
Bravo. Well, thank you very much for lending us a little bit of what you're doing in British Columbia, which is a beautiful part of the world.
Thanks very much, Rhea. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Jerry, you are Brian Cider, based in where in Virginia?
Nelson County, Virginia.
Nelson County, what, east, west?
It's pretty central, a little
central,
bit west.
Okay, all right.
Near Charlottesville.
So here you are at CiderCon pouring your ciders. They have no labels.
No labels.
So you're under the hood right now.
Under the hood. I officially got licensed about a week and a half ago.
Congratulations. So, that's huge.
So yeah, these are like samples I'd made over the past you know, 6 months. And
so what can people expect from your ciders? What are you looking at for your cidery?
It's tough. So more, you know, handcrafted, authentic, more country style ciders. So not going with super clear. I want to get some different flavors and just really go for a more craft and aim for, you know, not a standard, you know, generic cider. So not a really very high-end, like a Albemarle Cider Works or a, you know, a winey.
All right.
And not really a, you know, mass-produced beer cider.
Okay, so that's fair enough, kind of middle ground.
Right,
so are you orchard-based, or are you bringing in juice, or are you picking apples?
Right now I'm bringing in juice from my orchard, so it is picked on my orchard, taken away, and then I buy it back.
Have an orchard, they take the fruit away.
Yeah, so my orchard's leased out, so I buy my apples from the guys that lease my orchard.
Wow, how big of an orchard are we talking
about? 40 acres.
Holy smokes. This is a family orchard?
It's just me now, so.
Wow.
This is like, I'm working my way out of corporate life to be a farmer and make cider.
Wow, well, good for you. May I have a taste of your cider?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a spiced, more of a pie spice, 2% residual sugars.
Perfect. You said spice?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, cinnamon, some nutmeg. This one I want with a little bit of clove.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Like it?
Yeah, I do. All those spices just kind of drop down individually, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're making a primary base cider and then adding from there.
Correct. So I'll do a base, a secondary fermentation, and then modify a little bit.
Cool.
You know, right now they're not bottle conditioned. I think ultimately I want everything to be bottle conditioned, but
Are you going to have a tasting room, or are you primarily production and going up?
Going to be a tasting room, like, so that's kind of phase two. So get this going, have a product that actually is decent and develop a brand, and then do a small tasting room, and eventually I live in Richmond, so have a kind of a separate tasting room in Richmond.
Got
and
it.
Just get it there also.
Great.
But, yeah, trying to keep it small, so not distribution, no distribution, like self-distributed farm wineries.
Well, you're stepping into it, so sometimes people go running in like a bull, or sometimes people, you know, take it a very methodical approach. Both are.
I can do it without taking on debt.
That is a good thing.
No debt, no equity. So
that's right. That's
worst
right.
Worst case.
Good.
You know. No more fun cars.
Good. Well, best of luck. And
thank
it's
you.
Brian Cider in Virginia. In what county?
Nelson County.
Nelson County. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Doc Cheskin. I'm one of the owners and brewmaster at Liquid Alchemy Beverages in Wilmington, Delaware.
So you're a brewmaster, but you're making mead and cider. So
yes,
how
I am.
Are you a brewmaster versus a maker? Because it
a
sounds
maker.
Like a brewing.
Well, you know what? I've stumbled on both of these alcoholic specialties kind of by accident, kind of homebrewing gone crazy. I originally started making meats. I got good at it. I got, semi-bored one year when apples were in season, and I started to kind of play with ciders. It took a while because I tried a very hard style of cider to play with, but I eventually figured out how to make a really good mahogany cider, and now we actually
mahogany
call it...
Mahogany cider. Do you have a mahogany cider here?
It is... No, no. Well, actually, you know what? I actually have some... I brought some in my room. I mean, I brought some. We're going to have a little session later on.
We'll get that later. Okay.
It literally is as dark as...
What does that mean, mahogany cider? Is that
it's
like
that color.
Kind of,
that is the color it is. It's that dark.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, most ciders are very amber color.
Yeah.
This literally is a mahogany color.
All right. So you have some meads here.
These are ciders.
Okay.
These are still ciders, so they're not carbonated. They're unfiltered, and they're just made with Delaware products.
All right.
So
can
only
can
made
I
with,
try some?
Yep,
let's try some so we could talk, because I'm a little parched here.
Delaware apples.
That's perfect.
Delaware honey. Delaware water. Delaware made. And very, very smooth for 9.3%.
Holy smokes.
Yes.
But you're not and brewing that. You're fermenting that. Are you boiling that or anything?
Brewing is a general category. You know,
from
fermentation, there's basically all of the ciders that we make, except for our very simple ones, are a two-step process. So there's a primary fermentation and secondary fermentation. So, and, you know, I'll kind of throw that into the brewing category. So yeah, it's technically not a beer, but
it's also in the wine category too, and they don't brew. So I'm harassing you a little bit.
What is wine like? If there was like a winemaker, he would just say, "I'm making wine."
No, he's a winemaker.
Okay,
and he ferments.
But what would be the process that he would say?
He ferments.
Yeah.
He doesn't brew wine.
Well, it's because winemakers are too stuffy.
Because winemakers are what?
They're so stuffy that they just want to say that they're winemakers, and they put their pinky up in the air. We're somewhere between we're in the craft wine. We're in the craft ciders.
Right. Okay.
We're very much inspired by Dogfish Head and Yards and Victory and
Tours. All right. Yeah, which is based in Delaware.
Yep. We try to make some of the funkier styles.
Good. So that was really lovely. 9%, very smooth. Are all your ciders all Delaware-based product?
No. Actually, our primary source of apples are Pennsylvania. We happen to be very lucky.
We have a lot.
We're much in the north side of the state.
Yeah.
So we're very close to Pennsylvania. We're only a couple miles away.
Oh.
And we've got some of the best orchards in the country within about 50 miles of us. So we're very, very lucky. And we've got a source that is just brilliant. That's where we make most of our stuff. But this is part of a special edition. And we wanted to bring it here just because we know that everybody was going to be, tasting a lot of the more conservative flavors. So we wanted to bring something that was a little more off the wall and basically kind of bordering on an apple wine.
Well, that is a nice cider that you have there. And you could call yourself an alchemist, too.
We are an alchemist, yes.
There you go. So that would kind of like fit.
So maybe that's it. Maybe I'm not a brewer, but an alchemist.
Yeah.
Maybe that's better.
Well, cheers. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
We'll just go there. And
very nice talking to you.
Big tip of the glass to Brent from Heartland Cider in Ontario, Canada, Chris from Todd Creek Craft Cider in British Columbia, Jerry from Bryant Cider, a new cidery startup in Nelson County, and Doc, who is with Liquid Alchemy in Delaware. I have to say, Doc, I never did get a taste of that mahogany. I sure would. That would be pretty interesting. And then we'll get to see how your alchemist style actually works. You know, that conversation about brewing and fermenting and winemaking, it's one you have to have. And, I see the guy's point of view. He came in as a brewer. I could relate to that. The first thing I started doing was making beer. I was a home brewer. But as time goes on, just to kind of keep things clarified for the consumer, it's good to make sure that we know where we stand in the world so we don't get it too confusing. That might work for you, but I think the consumer can get confused. But maybe in the end, all they really care about is what's in their glass. I don't know. The jury's still out. We're going to come back, and I'm going to bring you up to snuff with some of the final recap of CiderCon in Baltimore 2018. Thursday is really the opening of CiderCon. It's a two-day conference in essence, even though there are some pre-conference events, much like most conferences, right? And it kicks off at 8:30 in the morning, bright and shiny. And there was a presentation by Danny Brager of the Nielsen Group, which I have the PowerPoint to and a recording. So stay tuned for that. I will be putting that out also on the Cider Chat YouTube channel. After that, I was headed to a chat and a recording with Paul Vanderhyde of Vandermill Ciders in Michigan. This is a cidery that has two locations now, and it was a very informative chat. And I was quite happy that Paul finally realized that it was worth his time to sit still and go through this recording. Originally, he was going to cut out in the middle just to go and introduce Ryan Burke of Angry Orchard. And you know, truthfully, Ryan doesn't really need too much of an introduction. He can handle that himself. I think once Paul got a sense of what Cider Chat was, he got it in his mind that actually this might be worth his while. And I super appreciate the bottle of his heritage cider called Chapman. I appreciate that because if you're a cider maker looking to be on the podcast, I really dig your modern ciders. Those are really cool. Having made blueberry ciders and banana ciders and ginger ciders myself. But to do just a straightforward apple cider, well, one thing, it showcases your cider making skills. And I imagine it's really the reason why you got into cider making in the first place. So thank you again, Paul. That podcast with Vandermill Cider will be coming out in a bit, so stay tuned for that. After my chat with Paul, then it was on to record and videotape the presentation by John Edwards, who also happens to be a patron of Cider Chat and a super duper whiz. John was fairly jet lagged, having flown in from Japan, but he put on a presentation on chemical fingerprints of cider, basically breaking down all the chemical components that you would find in a cider. And he's doing this analysis, and you know, I kind of followed it. Not to mention, I had my handy dandy camera there following his pointer along. So hopefully that will then deliver as a nice presentation for you. Look for it on the Cider Chat YouTube channel, along with a presentation by Rebecca De Kramer of Scott's Lab. She did a fantastic presentation also on off odors and talking about sulfur. And of course, Scott's Lab is all about selling yeast and really helping cider makers. Oh, handy dandy presentation. I also have her PowerPoint and a recording, so stay tuned for that on the Cider Chat YouTube channel. Let me catch a little breath here, and then I'll tell you about the rest of my evening, because believe me, that day had just begun. That evening, I was set to have dinner with Matt DeLong of Ridge Cider Company in Michigan. However, I had to bag that due to an obligation where I had to, well, do a family conference call. You see, I got a senior mom, and sometimes that takes conference calls to deal with. But Matt was kind enough to meet with me and forego the dinner. Wonderful time with him. Learned a lot about this new cidery out on the Ridge in Michigan, so stay tuned for that. But you know, I was still pretty hungry, and wouldn't you know it, back down in the lodge, I met Arlo Hein from Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. Now, if you're a regular listener of this podcast, you, like me, both know that Ramborn is part of the Cider Going Up campaign, specific to commercial cider makers who want to donate a little bit more to help keep this podcast thriving. Well, luck had it that we kind of walked into each other and was like, are you kidding me? And it turned out that no, he was not. He was there in like heart and soul and just the person I wanted to talk to. So that evening, I did have dinner with a cider maker and it turned out to be Carlo. What an amazing conversation and finding out about this cidery that is the only cidery in the country of Luxembourg. It is one heck of a scene there. So stay tuned for that podcast. It was fantastic. Well, again, the night didn't end there. After kind of settling down, after that amazing dinner and charming chit-chat, I decided it was time to take a little bit of me time. So I went up into my hotel room and grabbed my 4-foot staff and brought it down onto the 4th floor lobby, a little back room area, kind of near the elevators, but with a wide open space, because I need to work out a little bit. You see, I practice and teach Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art, and I've been finding that moving with a 4-foot staff and swirling that around really helps loosen up my shoulders. And I have one shoulder that is recovering from rotator cuff surgery. You know, I still can't put my arm out straight without my hand shaking, holding a cup of cider. And I'll be darned if I'm going to not be able to do that in short order. So I'm working pretty hard at that. And I took the time to like just spin around. In fact, there's going to be a little YouTube video going right up this week doing a synopsis of all the folks I met. And there'll be a little clip of the Aikido. because I sure love it, and I love sharing that too. In fact, I'm thinking next year at CiderCon, wouldn't it be nice to have cider and yoga, people who want to gather doing that? And maybe, I don't know, maybe I could figure out something with cider and a keto. Anyways, I digress. I worked out for a while and went back down to the lounge on my way up to the room and just happened to see somebody I was hoping to meet the whole time while I was there. And that was Erica Jetter, who is a cider enthusiast, and she was volunteering at CiderCon. So if you've been on any kind of social media for a while, you would have heard of Erica. So let me go to a little clip that I recorded with her actually on the last day of CiderCon, just to hear a little bit of her voice and what she's doing with her own cider making. So I'm here with Erica Jetter as Michelle McGrath is talking in the background, because we're in the furthest table in the back of CiderCon right now. And yeah, in case you don't know Erica, which would be really surprising, she is on a lot of the groups on Facebook, a very energetic cider maker, and that energy is really transpired into this amazing cider that we're drinking today called Wild Zambi. And I love that you are a camper, so you always have this like little Honda, what is that called?
Honda Element.
Honda Element, yeah. What year is your Honda Element?
It's a 2006.
2006. It makes it good for going around to be able to drink cider wherever you are, right?
Absolutely.
You could just pop
road trips,
up.
Trips, music, cider.
Right. I mean, obviously you're somebody who goes and seeks that out, so having that Honda Element, I think Honda should probably have you as like their... their go-to person.
But they stopped making the Element.
Actually. Damn them.
Yeah.
So what can you tell us about this Wild Zambi that you did here?
Well, people who are music fans from the Southeast will recognize that Zambi is a Colonel Bruce Hampton reference, big in the jam band scene, kind of the grandfather. And I attended his 70th birthday concert, huge big deal in Atlanta. And he left his body during the encore. He passed on stage.
What a way to go.
And I flew back to Richmond. I really didn't sleep that night. But I was on the tarmac, and I called Albemarle Cider Works and got Ann Shelton on the phone. And I said, do you finally have Albemarle Pippin juice for me? And the answer was yes. I had been waiting and waiting. So I immediately went and procured the juice and finally got the courage to do a completely wild ferment and let it go.
Wow.
And it's delicious. It's one of my favorite ciders. And I love Albemarle Pippin.
So what year was that made then? That's
this
a 20?
Was just... They were pressed around April, if you can believe it. They had the apples in cold storage at Vintage Virginia Apples.
Not even a year old.
So they had been, the apples, had been aging and developing, and they pressed them.
Beautiful presentation.
Yeah.
We're going to have a photo of you holding your stunning bottle. I like that you don't put a label on it, because it makes it, as somebody who's non-commercial, you don't have to worry about taking off the label. You just put a little string over it.
They make great bookmarks, and then...
Yeah, you have all the... So you have 7.8% ABV, Albemarle Pippin Apples, Wild Yeast, Courage, and Time is free.
Time, the secret ingredient.
Time. And time. It's free.
And that's another Colonel Bruce reference.
How long have you been making cider?
Only since 2015.
And yet you have come so far. That's an amazing structured cider
Thank
that you,
you
have there.
Yeah,
I would say it's one of the better ones that I've had at CiderCon.
Thanks for you.
So keep it going.
Thank you.
And I have no doubt that Erica will. On top of meeting Erica, I also met a chap that I didn't really know what he looked like or who he was until I was finally introduced. And that is David, who happens to be a cider enthusiast and a patron of Cider Chat. I got to hang out with those two and a couple more folks, and it was special because, you get to go to CiderCon. There's a lot of rock stars there, but it's the folks that are kind of hanging out in the corners or just sweet as apple pie and amazing people, the depth that I really enjoy kind of hanging with and getting to know them. So thank you so much for kindly hanging out with me and being in the elevator that night on Thursday when, unbeknownst to us, a woman walked on and started reading my aura. That was rather amazing. I think she needs to go to the Long Island Medium and maybe kind of control some of her vision, because, you know, it kind of, she just started blurting out the colors that she saw on me right from there, and I didn't really know what to do with it. But needless to say, folks, never a dull moment at CiderCon. And that's just Thursday. Friday was amazing, too. I started off the morning by having a chat with Alec Peckham of Peckham Cider in New Zealand. It was the first time I got to speak to a New Zealand cider maker, and oh, he delivered. He was going on or getting ready to leave, and then he said, oh, but I haven't talked about wild yeast yet. And I said, please do. We sat down for even longer. So that chat will be also upcoming. Stay tuned for that. The afternoon of Friday, I was able to meet with one of my heroes, Susanna Forbes, known as Drink Britain from the UK, and her husband, James Forbes. They both have Little Pomona Cidery in the Hereford region of the UK. And I know I had spoke about this earlier. Yes, indeed, I got a recording from them, and I tasted their cider. And I just want to say, they are doing a certain niche that was rather interesting. We had one Keeve cider, and then the other cider knocked my socks off. A deep, rich, tannic cider, and something that I liken to of a level of cider making that is really unique. You could see that James comes from a winemaking background or a wine aficionado background, and how he and Susanna, they blended this cider. This is one that can be aged, and I do believe it should be aged, and you'll hear us talking about it. And I don't see that kind of style of cider making around too often, but is one to really keep an eye on. So you go, Little Pomona. I am stoked to get that podcast out. There's a lot of podcasts, actually, because that evening I headed then on to Pour the Core, and by the time that was all done, I had a total of about 15 recordings, including some videotapes. So there's a lot in the queue now, all for you, Ciderville. And if you feel that this is worth your time, please, please, please become a patron of Cider Chat. And if that doesn't work for you, a donation is just as good, too. I am looking for sponsors of this podcast to help it keep on growing and allowing me to keep on producing these amazing conversations with makers from around the world, with people in the cider trade, and with cider enthusiasts just like you. When I come back, I'm going to tell you about the final voyage that we had before I headed back to my final spot in Ciderville. Oh, hey, Palms, I didn't know you were going to be on this episode.
Well, of course we are going to be on this episode, Rhea. You're speaking about Perryville. In fact, I think this segment should be moved to the front of the podcast, don't you?
Perry has been out in the orchard all week telling everyone about our trip to Perryville, Maryland.
It's true, Rhea. He's been talking about it even in his sleep. I now have to wear earplugs at night. That's not easy for a Quince, you know.
Oh, Mr. Quince, I can't even imagine.
Tell me about it.
Well, you know, I was going to talk about it, but now that you're here, Perry Pear, I think you probably might be the best pair to be talking about it right now.
Indeed. We set off to Perryville after being at CiderCon in Baltimore. It is 1 hour north of Baltimore, a very short drive, and along the sea coast. In fact, it's right off Interstate 95. Upon arriving to Perryville, you will see a large sign that says, Welcome to Perryville. In fact, you will see many signs that say Perryville Sportsman Bar, Perryville Town Hall, Perryville Police, Perryville written across an entire bridge in very large letters, mind you.
Oh, these pears.
I thought it was beautiful everywhere there was Perryville, but I didn't see too many pears, Perry.
That is not the point of this story. The story is that Perryville was there. And for those of you out in Ciderville, you should know that there is a Perryville. And this, I suspect, is one of many Perryvilles. I do recommend that we all visit Perryvilles and document it as such. There'll be photos up on the show notes for this episode. Which number is that, Mr. Quince?
This is episode 115, Perry, Baltimore Speaks Cider.
Right. I think it probably should be saying Baltimore Speaks Cider and Perryville Speaks Pear.
And on that note, Ciderville, we're going to roll on out of here. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be back with another podcast. And in the meantime, enjoy all the cider and Perry that's out there.
That's exactly what we're going to be going to do after this episode.
You're right about that, Perry Pear. All right, what do you say we take it out of here?
Okay, Mr. Quince, cue the music. 3, 2, 1.
This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. With a little bit of help from my friends, the Talking Palms, we wish you the best of days and hope to see you soon in Ciderville.
Perhaps we should ask Perryville, Maryland, if they'd like to set up a Perry Museum.
Oh, brother.
That's a great idea, Perry.
Okay, Palms, let's go and close up this shop. Come on, cue that yeehaw. We're out of here.
Yeehaw!